Video game bang, video game bang, video game bang. Mega Ran. Live from the sack, it's the live, it's a fact. I'm putting rhymes on this track to put my guys on the map. Updates, geek news, tech talk, and reviews. They can summarize it so you ain't gotta breeze through. Listen once and you're forever fans. And I'm not saying it because their theme song features Mega Ran, the ultimate source of all geek media. Other podcasts, they just don't match up. Need proof? You can check the archives and catch up. Stats off the chain, we have rearranged the game. It'll never be the same. Now it's time to feel the bang.
Bang! What is up, my pizzas? Corey Vincent here, back at it again. 2020 in the building. I'm so excited. It is the first episode of the new decade. And let me just start by saying this is the longest break Video Game Bang has ever taken. And what the fuck were you guys doing out there? Jesus. We're at war. Like,
God. Step away for 1 minute.
I know. We
leave. War is declared on Twitter. And it's not between celebrity beefs. So.
Ninja has shoes now? Like, what the hell happened?
Ninja got shoes?
Yeah, he got. He actually, they're not bad. He made them with Adidas. But okay, you know, we're back now to set the record straight. We're here to fix the economy. We're here to fix shit. Starting
or at least talk about it first.
We'll talk about it. That's how change begins.
Yeah, there you go.
Speaking of change, he never changes. He is. Been doing his podcast for over 200 episodes now.
Yeah.
They invited me to be a part of episode 200. It was a great honor. It was like a reunion special with their first host, Chad Michael Riley.
That's right.
The film philosopher's very own, Eddie Villanueva.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of BGB.
Well, he did it. He did the thing.
Oh, man. It's been awesome, but it's been a really great experience. Just experience that level of like longevity in podcasting, because I know it's interesting. The first time you tell me about podcasting, you're like, 74% of podcasts don't make it past episode 7. So at least make it to episode 8 and you'll be okay. And all the way till that, until now, and I'm at episode 200 and I'm excited and I'm just glad to be on tonight.
It was a great episode. I had a lot of fun. Basically, what we did, if you guys are looking for more podcasts to listen to, The Filmlosophers, start on episode 200. We talked about the... It was good.
It was good.
Anytime you can review, and you did we did best, like our favorite movies. It wasn't like best.
Yeah.
Like preferential, what's your favorite movie in the comedy section, in the dramas. And it just a good time to talk about like some sleeper hit movies.
Yeah.
What were some of the favorites for you? What was your movie of the year?
Oh, man.
Or the decade.
My favorite. So one of my favorite movies of the decade had to have been Logan. Just hands down one of the best films in terms of encapsulating my love for comic books, my love for Marvel, and my love to see just a great story that has lasted so long come to a beautiful conclusion.
Right. Also joining us back, I'm glad to have him here, starting the year strong. He's the busiest man in show business. Curtis, what's up?
Bruh, just happy to be back, man. a lot of King's stuff to cover, a lot of comic book stuff to
cover. Catch us up. So for those of us who haven't been able to pay attention to our Kings as much as we'd like to, how are we looking?
Bad. Real bad right now. It's real bad.
Didn't even sugarcoat it. There you go.
But we are currently on a 2-game winning streak, and that was on back-to-back games, which we like never win back-to-back. So we won 2 back-to-back games. We're still in the playoff hunt, though, because we're not the only really bad team in the NBA in the West. But just a lot of injuries and people haven't been able to stay healthy and stay on the court. So it's hard to get a rhythm with all the people that you depend on when, you know, it's like a revolving door. But, people are stepping up with De'Aaron Fox back, it's still exciting to watch because he's just so fast and. He'd be crossing people up and shaking people. It's crazy, man.
So, yeah, all right. Are we better than the Golden State Warriors?
Everybody's better than the Golden State Warriors right now.
All right, we could take solace in that. Yeah, and then also filling in that very important, the most critical role on the show is whoever sits in the fourth chair.
Oh, yeah. It's true.
And he came on short notice, thankfully, and he's here. He's with us, and we can catch up. Now I finally have my buddy to talk about Overwatch League stuff.
Forever.
Mr. Kyle, what is going on, man?
Not much, man. I love how, like, every single time that you reach out about, like, hey, can you sub in real quick, I just so happen to be available when there's other people who are like, yo, man, can you get this? Like, nah, man, I'm sorry, I got this one thing tonight. Well, I got this one thing tonight. Like, I am surprisingly busy, yet you always manage to be like, the one day I have off, like something just got canceled.
See,
like,
that's the thing you don't know is Corey's so tech savvy, he actually already has your schedule on that's his computer. True. So he's like, oh, he's not doing anything tonight. Give him a call. So,
what's your take? Because you also have a podcast as well. It's Blackwatch Report.
Yeah.
That's right, and it's in association with the guys at
High Noon Podcast.
So these are big, like, Overwatch podcasts, and you got your finger on the pulse. What are you thinking so far of the off season?
I'm excited, man. There's a lot of cool changes happening. There's a lot of cool teams coming up. Interesting.
Who made the biggest moves, do you think, in the off season?
I can't, like, I would have said that, like, Seoul picking up Prophet and Jester was big, but they kind of gave away all their other big players, and now they just have Prophet and Jester. I think Toronto's doing cool stuff. I'm excited about the, like, they're not going to be great, but they're going to be interesting. I think Atlanta made the most interesting and the best moves, picking up Sharp and Edison.
Okay.
And just picking up also their academy guys, too.
You specialize in the T2 scene.
That is correct.
So who are the big pickups, the ones you haven't mentioned yet, that you're most excited to see come from T2?
So
who's going to make the biggest splash?
The Paris Eternal has Sparkle, who's like the Doomfist god and is also pretty good at Pharah and Genji and stuff like that. He ages in like May, so I have to wait a little bit as
Where have I heard that strategy before? Right? Yeah, exactly.
It's going to work out, though. As well as London has a team of essentially nobodies, plus a pretty good off-tank who's been with Fusion who's in Bernard, but then specifically Glister they picked up from, I believe, Gen G. He's a projectile DPS player and is just absolutely incredible. So this guy could be, like, solo carrying this whole team.
Any people that were already in Overwatch League that haven't found teams that you're surprised?
Like, got dropped or weren't able to come back.
Like Taimu, for example, was that a big
that
one?
Was interesting. I'm not like why would no one pick him up? Like, I still have one player that I'm like furious that hasn't gotten a spot, and that's Crimzo on Envy. But, like, other than that, I feel like most of the... I think Gods deserves another chance as well. I will always be a little bit Gods biased because he's a super cool dude. But
there's a blend. There's a mix. And you've seen teams live and die by the mix of, like, really competitive players and content machines.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of wiggle room if you're a really good content machine to maybe not be one of the best players.
Yeah.
And I think... I mean, this comes from a plat player. I'm not trying to critique people here, but... As far as Gods goes, like, he was on our old energy roster, and he's been around for a long time, and I watched all the content that the other teams made. He was money in a lot of those spots. When they went and met the tennis players and stuff, like, he's... I don't know why you would get rid of a spokesman.
He just puts out tweets of, like, 15-second videos, and they're the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, when he joined the Toronto Defiant... And they went, like, 0-7. He posted me, like, ha, 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 what's up, girl? Just went 0-7 in the Overwatch League. It's like that content he puts out is so funny, and just his own brand of it. And, like, no one seems to take advantage of that. Like, Toronto didn't do anything with that. Like,
for us, I think season 2 was the year of, like, Super. You know, Super really, his stream blew up, and he was just the biggest personality.
Especially after the bit with him being on Sideshow stream. when Aumang was, like, popping off, and when the Yada Ched came up, and he was just, he worked on his
I remember his one of his first big moments being the super bad stuff. Like, that's like when he really got brought to the forefront. Casters were talking about him and all that. And but in contrast, I remember when we lost Dante to the Outlaws, and as the social guy, I was like, oh shit, like, what are we going to do? Because Dante was always just coming up with some
just
little...
Just says random weird stuff that's hilarious.
Also, big stuff in Overwatch League, before we move on, Monty, Doa, Puckett, all leaving, and there's articles of Doomsday coming out all over the place from different sources. What's your buy-in or what's your take on that?
It's not like a good change. It's not like Monty and Doa were like toxic people that needed to leave, but I don't think it's like the end of the league. It sucks because they were two incredibly positive and influential people. I would have loved to see them move into more production-y behind the scenes roles, because they both are like wealths of experience. But I don't know. I don't think it's like the end of. I think that like they were integral in getting the things in getting the league like, you know, off the runway. But like now we're kind of coasting. I mean, yes, we're starting localization stuff like that, but that's more so on the teams. I would think about keeping the stability there. I don't think like there's too many changes that you need to really worry with them about. So I don't think anything's gonna like explode. But like, if we keep seeing other casters leaving, I think if nothing else, it's a sign that maybe Blizzard needs to try to take care of their own a little bit more, that like pay them better, try to work with them a little bit more, because there was so many creative differences that Monty cited of the reason why he left. Like, yeah, when Nate left, part, what is his reason?
Yeah, it was a 12-part tweet basically that started with you know, when Nate Nancer left, he didn't believe anybody there has a vision for esports, which is scary. And that's one of the things that when I first got into the league, Monty was so critical, especially of us. Like, he was like of the opinion that if you want to be successful, you just get a bunch of Korean players,
and
he did not like our strategy from the beginning. And and it hurts when Monty says something bad, because people, a lot of people take what he says very, very seriously. And he's been in the industry 15 plus years. So when he's doing that, it hurts. But then to have the turnaround story where he's calling us a dominant team and stuff, it feels like we've earned it.
Right.
And so I think a big chunk of credibility, I guess, just kind of leaves with him. So I'm going to miss the guy. And I agree 100% with what you're saying. It's going to be on the teams and getting these teams selling tickets and stuff. And speaking of which, are you going to be going to local events?
I'm really hoping to. I was assuming I was going to be in the Bay Area at the time when like, I thought I was going to get like a Bay Area job. I'm like, oh, dude, it's going to be super easy. And then like that fell through. And so now I'm like, it might be a little harder too, but I need to get tickets.
So we can get on to some stuff, because we've been gone for so long. We're a little outdated, so we got to catch up on the world. And one of the things I'm most excited to talk to this crew about specifically is a Star Wars, baby. We had the movie come out. Yep. There was a lot of talk before it came. Kurt, I remember watching the trailer teasers and stuff with you, and you were not hyped.
No, like, I was not hyped, bro.
You were anti-hype.
Yep.
Tell me about your experience going to see Rise of Skywalker.
Going in being so not hyped as I was.
Not hyped.
As it were.
I would almost say a little negative.
Full transparency, I thought I was going to despise and hate the movie. I didn't hate it. Definitely didn't hate it. It definitely wasn't the Star Wars ending to another saga that we as hardcore Star Wars fans really deserved whatsoever. But being that my expectations were so low, I went in with the knowledge of a hardcore Star Wars fan, but like the expectations of a very casual.
That's Star the way Wars to do it. Yep. I think that is the secret to happiness.
Well, I wasn't happy about it, but I walked out and I said, you know what? I liked my time there. If you can sit there and when certain things happen, you go, nah.
Yeah, I felt like this movie definitely, at one point in time, there was a promise that this movie was going to fix all the wrongs of this new trilogy.
Right.
That was the intention going
impossible.
Well, yes, very much impossible, but still otherwise stated. Like, this is what you had somebody like J.J. Abrams, biggest Star Wars fan in all of Hollywood and blah, blah, blah. Which, mind you, he probably is.
Yeah.
That's, you know, neither here nor there.
Right.
But the promise was that this film was going to try to fix a little bit of the wonkiness that this whole trilogy had kind of gone on. And we talk about it at length in Lesson 199 on the Filmosophers.
Nice plug.
Thank you. where, honestly, I think the biggest problem with this film wasn't so much the film itself, but where this whole trilogy has just landed. Because, in all honesty, the one thing this trilogy didn't have that the original trilogy had and the prequel trilogy had, which this isn't to say the prequel trilogy is successful. Mm-hmm. It's just to say that, you know what, there was consistency, is both of those had a George.
Right.
Much like how Marvel has a Kevin Feige and other entities are still trying to figure the whole, you know, their whole game out. There was nobody to hold everybody accountable. Mm. And so the story just went all over the place. I'm pretty sure J.J. Abrams had like some type of good story in mind. But by the time it got to the end of this particular film, he was like, fuck it, just Just throw it out.
And yeah. there's a lot of articles about going about right now saying that, you know, what we saw, he didn't even get final look at and approval.
Yeah.
Like, there were some things that, you know, he saw, was surprised by when he went to the premiere, and that there's apparently a JJ cut that's like 50 minutes longer.
Yeah, there's a whole Reddit post. Somebody who is, quote unquote, close to JJ. And was
it's
on.
It's JJ.
He's close to JJ. Yeah. Was stated that, you know, JJ had had troubles throughout the entire production. That at one point in time, that JJ was actually in a meeting with the executives and was overheard actually yelling, saying, "Well, why don't you just put on the film written and directed by the, you know, Walt Disney Studios?" And there's a lot of hearsay because there's a lot of things in it. First off, that information came out after the fact, after everybody started complaining. So there's some, you know, suspect stuff in that.
There was one of my favorite stories is from someone who I guess sat near him during the premiere and said that they heard him audibly groan
yeah.
at the line when they said "they fly now."
Yeah,
they fly now, and the judge was like, "Oh shit!" Like, and that was just, you know, to sell toys or whatever, and he knew it.
To be honest, here's, I think, the best way to indicate how this film made people feel is the difference between when I was in the theater. I was there opening night for The Force Awakens. And I actually, because you and I, Corey, had worked at the same place, and we had an actual company Christmas party to go to at that time.
Yeah.
I completely X'd out of that Christmas party just so I can get in line early for the movie. And I was there, and I remember everybody cheering and yelling. And mind you, everybody was still fresh on the idea of like, oh shit, we got it. We got Han Solo.
It's
we
back.
Get, you yeah, know, yeah, everything's yeah. back, and everybody was excited. There was like that energy.
Yeah.
The only people that laughed at the screening when I was there, like that got into it, were all the little kids. Every single adult, every single person who looked like they know the at least some of the lore, I could hear the groans. I could hear like, oh my God. I
can't believe they did that.
I can't believe, yeah. And it's you know what? It's fine because you know what? It's over. This trilogy's done. They're going to take at least 4 or 5 years off. They have to.
Yeah.
They got to let it sit. They got to.
I don't know about 4 or 5 years.
Come before they do another actual episode.
Yeah, I mean, well, they're not doing any more, right? This is over.
No.
Star Wars or oh, not yeah. Star Wars? Skywalker stuff is done.
Yeah. The Skywalker yeah. stuff, long, but that yeah. doesn't mean that the universe is completely done.
Yeah, with. And they can go anywhere in the timeline and out. I was thinking about this the other day. Like, how sick would it be if they started a brand new Star Wars?
Yeah, that's what I want.
Which is what they're doing with The Mandalorian.
And then, like, in three, you know, give that like time, like 3 episodes later, and there's like a rumor of a Skywalker somewhere else in the galaxy. Because the galaxy is a huge ass place.
Well,
it's
see,
possible
this,
that the things that they did there don't even affect other pieces
and
of the galaxy.
That's another part that pissed me off. This movie was supposed to end the Skywalker saga, and I guess spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't seen it, if you haven't seen it, whatever.
I think,
at the
hold on,
very
we
end,
should go, we should, since we, that was a good beginning part, spoilers are okay now.
Okay.
This thing's been out for like a goddamn month.
Okay,
so if you haven't seen it, it's your fault.
It's your fault. The fact that they make Rey this like ancestral hillbillies brother sister kind of you know conglomerate of like, oh,
wait,
it's
what?
A Skywalker.
Where's this going?
Well, because yeah. like you have the force ghosts of both Leia and Luke looking off, and they're like, oh, I'm a Skywalker, instead of like owning her own name.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just seemed like, okay, I thought we were done with the Skywalkers. Now when they jump back into the films, Daisy Ridley is going to come back and be like, oh, I'm the Luke Skywalker in this particular thing.
Hopefully she doesn't come back.
Aren't we
it's
expecting
done.
Them to not, like, bring... I'm hoping that they just, like, drop that whole cast and, like, whole new story,
yeah,
whole
exactly.
new trilogy. Whole
that's,
new, cause, like,
that's the hope.
Like,
I mean,
on to
Harrison
the old
Ford
trilogy
spent,
was not...
Harrison Ford spent every minute of both Empire Strikes Back and The Return of the Jedi hoping his character would die so that he wouldn't have to come back.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they finally gave him his promise. They probably they answered his wish by killing him off in The Force Awakens.
True.
Kurt, what was your favorite parts?
Favorite part of the movie?
Yeah.
The end. When it was over and I got to leave. That was easily my very favorite part.
With your expansive knowledge, what were the things that bothered you the most, I think, with this one?
Oh, here, my gosh.
Let me give you my take first.
Okay.
I think The Force Awakens was okay. I think
it was
okay.
It was okay.
I think it was huge fan service.
Oh,
they
completely.
Were stroking our, you know, our bodies.
That's
and giving
what
us all the
stroking
blood.
Our bodies.
I'm like,
yeah,
egos, is that what they maybe? Were is that what you're looking at? Egos.
They were just giving us everything we wanted.
They were just stroking, got
like
it. Okay.
Millennium Falcon 5 second pause, you know, just yeah. for applause,
right,
you know?
Right, right?
And then so it was okay. I'll yeah. give it that. Then I don't know. It went off the rails in that second one with Force Ghost Leia like doing Superman stuff.
Just
space.
Mary Poppins that shit.
Yeah, and then Rey.
Mary Poppins, y'all.
Rey is just like the most overpowered character ever.
Oh,
we've
completely.
Never seen why or how. In this one, it felt like there's no way. I knew going into this movie they weren't going to be able to fix everything.
No.
All I wanted was to have like what Kurt said. I wanted to leave. Happy, I guess. You know, like I spent my time
fulfilled,
well.
Fulfilled.
Fulfilled yeah. to a degree.
I mean, you've already spent, what, 4 years? You've invested 4 or 5 years of your time into this trilogy, so you're hoping you get something at the end
and
of this.
And much more time before that is the most important stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Like the part you grew up with, and then even the prequels. So, I don't know. I just wanted to see what they did. And, like, I felt like it channeled some of one. I just wanted fan service and for it to end well, so I thought bringing Palpatine back was cool. I think trying to explain away some of the stuff that made zero sense, like the training montage they showed for Rey. Like, okay, yeah. Now, yeah, she's swirling rocks and floating. Like, okay, see, she's training. You know, she has a drill. Leia trained her. Oh, how did Leia learn that shit? Luke trained her.
They
fixed that in a 10-second flashback. Fine. I was cool with all that kind of stuff. I got to see Wedge. I love Wedge from the original.
That battle scene was so frustrating.
But I love Wedge.
Oh my gosh.
You don't understand. He's one of my favorite characters.
No, Wedge is it's a great callback. He wasn't able to do The Force Awakens. He was supposed to come back for The Force Awakens, and that didn't pan out. And he didn't get called back for the second film, The Last Jedi. Yep. But when he got the call for this one, he jumped on that boat, which is cool.
Babu Freak. So I left it okay, and I felt like they righted enough wrongs and gave me enough fan service to where I was like, okay, it's over now. What's next? You know, let's go back to the Mandalorian and stuff like that. So, Kurt, what was your, like, breakthrough? What was the things that bothered you, and what are the things you liked?
The trilogy is ready! Babu Freak was definitely the highlight of the movie. Off rip, Palpatine coming back.
And then at one point getting it on with someone to make a kid. So.
Oh, yeah. I know, right? Who knows who laid Palpatine?
It flow.
Star Wars. XXX. XXX Wing. seriously. One of the most important parts about Luke and his dad's relationship is how he believed in the goodness of his father when literally no one else in the galaxy did, and that love that he had and that faith that he had was strong enough to make him turn around and go against his master or whatever, you know, and Darth Sidious. So, like, to have them go through all that and Vader give his life to make that happen, and then they just bring Palpatine back, like,
Vader died for nothing now.
Yeah, this is like that whole original trilogy that we all fell in love with. Like, they went through all that just so this dude can come back and get killed by, some rando with two lightsabers and an X. And that was the other thing, how Palpatine died. Come on, Doc, for real? Like, you just can't stop shooting Force lightning?
Yeah.
That's all you had to do was just stop.
Yeah.
Come on. Like, or did Rey learn how to shoot Force lightning through the lightsabers to him so he really wasn't
It's it's when
anyway?
When you make the X, you
it's
like
when the X, I
X
know.
Gonna give it to you.
X
so
gonna get, that's what I thought. I was like, oh, great. You know, like, just bring Deadpool in, Disney. Like, let's just make it really, really
she
weird.
She used the old Mace Windu strategy.
Mm-hmm.
He was about to put him down with that same exact
just walk into him.
Yeah, just use your lightsaber, walk straight into him.
Rey Windu.
Yeah.
Rey Windu. That's
I'm your daddy.
I would believe that. Like, if Rey was like,
I'd believe that.
Rey,
believe.
Your last name is Windu.
Windu, Rey Windu. I'm your daddy.
Motherfucker.
Yes.
I'm your daddy.
Oh, man. So I had a problem with that. I definitely didn't like how she's Rey Skywalker. Like, if anything, own up to who you are and be like, you know, I'm Rey Palpatine, you know, and I defeated, you know, the one of the darkest forces in, you know, the universe.
Yeah.
And I'm rewriting the name, you know what I mean? So I couldn't stand that. I couldn't stand how she could just force heal people. That was just like...
Eddie and I talked about that before the show today. I think Kyle, too. Mm-hmm. We were saying that like that was the one technique that Darth Vader, Anakin, was chasing. That's what led him to the dark side from the
dream. Ray can just have it. She's like, oh, I'm
now babies are fucking doing this shit.
Yeah, like, and I'm like, if Baby Yoda can do that, why the hell didn't Obi-Wan heal Qui-Gon when he was... See? He knows.
Yeah.
Like, that's a real thing. Like,
that ability wasn't unlocked. I would have loved to have had
Liam Neeson throughout episode 1, 2, and 3.
That's what it was. Yeah. It wasn't patched in yet.
Okay, they didn't put out that update. Liam Neeson's
died before the update.
Man, it's messed up. So that was a few things. Another J.J. Abrams thing. I couldn't stand how they didn't show us the second ship that Chewbacca got on. They only showed us one ship. So when she did the Force Lightning, and she blew it up, and then Chewbacca showed up again later, I was like, dog, that's the same thing you did with Poe in The Force Awakens.
They went
you
back to the tropes.
Yeah, dude, they did. It was lost.
They did that three times in that movie where they're like, something happens. Oh, wait, no, it doesn't. Like, oh, we're going to wipe C-3PO's memory.
Right.
Oh, we'll put it back.
Oh, but like, R2 has it all back. All right, okay. This is like, all for nothing.
I mean, like, you don't even let us wonder for a while.
Kill Kyle Ren. Or bring him back.
Yeah, bring him back.
Yeah.
It's not a Star Wars movie unless they blow up a planet, Chewbacca gets captured.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
One more. Okay, this one is so. I mean, the other ones are pretty ridiculous, but this one's really ridiculous. Where the hell did that Final Order fleet come from? Just under the ground? They were just under the ground.
They were Union.
They were
Union.
Oh, okay, so they don't show up until
exactly.
Okay, I got it. Rise, my Final. I'm like, dog, you buried the whole Final Order. Were those people in the ships underground too, buried alive?
Egyptians 2,000 years ago. See, we got it right. We got it right.
We got it right. Palpatine had it the whole time. Yeah, it was just. It was. I mean, and then who were those people out in his little area? Were those a bunch of
Sith?
I have
a theory that he really misses being in the Senate and having a lot of people watching him. He was just chilling on Exegol by himself. He was like, yo, dude, I miss people. I used to talk to thousands of people. He used to cheer my name. Like, right. And he just, like, using his force powers, like, just summoned creatures to just like cheer on
not,
him.
Not even, it's simpler than that. I think it's simpler. He's like, you build me incredible blowing machines to make these people wave.
Yeah,
that's all it was.
Like, it was just
wind
machines.
It's just cloth, and they do like a,
exactly.
Like
that's all it was.
Just like the floating arm guys.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's what it was. Force floating arm guys.
There you
we
go.
Solved it.
Exactly.
JJ, we're waiting for our check.
Now here's like this was my biggest. Mind you, I had a ton of other complaints, but my biggest complaint. They showed the goddamn ghost in the battle with all the other ships.
Yeah.
I wanted to see General Syndulla. Mm-hmm. I wanted to see Chopper. I wanted to know what the hell happened to like all this stuff that they left us on at the end of Star Wars Rebels.
Right.
I wanted to see happen in this. They've shown already the ghost in Rogue One.
Right.
They showed the ghost in this one, and I'm like, okay, they're going to show General Syndulla probably with her son. Maybe, you know, Sabine's going to be somewhere in there. Fuck no.
Less than nothing.
Flip the table.
Just let's go to one place and find a thing. Like, oh, we need a wayfinder, which is really
a holocron.
Revan's holocron.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's all it was.
Which I wish they would have just called it that. Why couldn't they just say Darth, you know, like even bring up a little info thing like Darth Revan wants a Sith.
Yeah.
Well, now you know.
Yeah. I mean, even that I'd have been like, okay, that's exposition, but for the people that really give a damn, sweet. Thank you for acknowledging Revan in the movie.
Yeah. And they easily could have, since, you know, they make books and things that kind of explain, and apparently they gave sections of that crowd, or at least some of the statues, like their own call sign or designation.
Yeah.
And and in that book, which is, I guess, all canon, there's like the Revan Order. And stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
So they technically canonized the Knights of the Old Republic stuff.
You know,
but they could have just said the name.
Right.
The entire plot of the Rise of Skywalker felt like an RPG to me.
Very much.
Because it's like, okay, we need you to go get this one thing. But first, when you get here, this guy is holding it from you and he needs you to do this other thing. I'm like, bro, what am I playing, Outer Worlds or something? Like, what
right.
Really? Am I going to have to go get this thing for you and rescue your daughter? And then you're going to come back, then give me that info, then like go out layers and then in more layers for each.
Yeah.
I went and saw it once. You know, I saw it with my wife. And then the second time, I had to go see it with the homie, David Ng. And I love seeing movies with David because he's not afraid to like talk during it.
Oh,
so, you know, we'll be talking stuff. And it's funny you mentioned that because when they were on the planet where they fell through the sand and that played like a Dungeons and Dragons campaign.
Yeah.
You stumble upon giant creature.
Y'all were not looking where I told you to look, so I'm just going to drop you into the thing that you were supposed to find 45 minutes ago because y'all got sidetracked.
Right. He's wounded. Yeah. What do you do?
Roll for action.
Okay, I'll go first. I have priority.
Roll for heal wounds.
I want to look at him in the eyes and heal him. Yeah. All right, roll it. Oh, shit, it worked out. All right,
cool. There you go. Ray heals with the Force. All right. Is that canon? Fuck, it is now.
Just now, she rolled it.
Did you pick it? It was in the player's manual. Okay, shit, okay.
Final thoughts, Kurt. You said you saw it twice. What made you go see it again?
I owed someone a movie.
There you go.
I fell asleep on it like 4 times the second time, too. Oh. Yeah, it was bad. It was bad. Actually, me and Pixelina, me and Christina went to go see it. And I dropped my keys when I was asleep. And when it ended, well, we went in the 4DX thing, so you know, like the chairs were all shaking.
And you still fell asleep?
Dog, I was out cold. Like it was blowing water in my face and I was asleep. She was like, "You fell asleep, huh?" I was like, I looked down, my keys were on the ground. I'm like, dang, I didn't even hear my keys hit the ground. I'm like, yeah. So yeah, it was pretty bad, yo.
Oh.
Out of 10, what'd you give it?
Oh, gosh. Do I have to?
Okay. Hold on. How does it rank then with all the Star Wars movies that have come out?
Of the nine? Ooh. Dang. Ooh.
Let's see.
Okay.
Is it better than any of the prequels?
Is it better than any better of than the prequels? First
any of the prequels.
Better than Phantom?
Just because we had Darth Maul alone and we had Qui-Gon and the Phantom Menace, I can't even put it above the Phantom Menace.
But
and
then
I
it also
hated
had
all the pod racing stuff.
There
you go.
Yeah. Let's just do the sequel. So in the sequel trilogy, I do have it as the number one because I did not like Force. I didn't like Force Awakens. The second that Force Awakens came out, I was just like, this was the new Star Wars? I get it. I'm excited that we got new Star Wars. But this was the new Star Wars. And then when The Last Jedi came out, I was just like, you guys don't give a damn.
Nope.
And then when this came out, I was like, I already knew y'all didn't give a damn. But thank you for just not making it horrible. So I got this one as number one. I got The Force Awakens as number two. And then I got The Last Jedi as number three. Rogue One, out of the Disney movies, Rogue One is number one.
Absolutely. Still.
By far.
Yeah.
True. Yeah. I rewatched that one and it was good. You know, I even rewatched Solo. And,
Dude, I actually like Solo.
Yeah, I liked it better the second time. Yeah.
I rewatched about a month ago. I watched from Phantom Menace, and I just finished Empire. I've been going through like chronologically through all of them in order. Uh-huh. Yeah, Rogue One definitely is so it's so nice to be able to like see all these in context now, and kind of like you don't have like the rose tinted glasses looking back like, oh no, dude, this movie was so good. Like now I realize like, okay, Attack of the Clones was pretty bad. I just enjoyed it because I was 8 when it came out, so like you get to like get more of the context on on all of them. But
yeah,
out of 10, Eddie, how many monocles are you giving it?
This one,
yeah,
maybe 3.
3 out of 10.
Yeah,
wow. I was at 3.5
because like it's like Curtis was saying, it's definitely better than The Last Jedi. It's comparable to the Phantom Menace. Like seriously, Jar Jar Binks is just the worst racially insensitive character in all of Star Wars. I love Duel of the Fates, like having John Williams create that out of that trilogy. It's got to be like a 3. It's in those low numbers, and by far, like Rogue One and Empire are my two favorites.
Yep.
So,
right. Kyle, what do you think?
As a Star Wars movie, I throw it as a 7. As a movie, like a 4.
Okay. Chat is a little more optimistic than you guys. Lost Sheep gave it a 7. Steven, 7. Tronos gave it a 7. Ego Brain, 7. So there's a lot of 7s across the board. And I'm likely to agree with them. I think I'd give it like a 6. 6er? 6.5?
Okay.
A 6er? I mean, hey. Different strokes for different folks, right?
Absolutely.
So stroking things and stuff like that.
I'm easy to pleasey, baby.
There you go. All
right, we got some other stuff happening in the world of video gaming. Have you guys seen the new PS5 logo?
Yeah.
Now, you know what's crazy about it is, and I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but if you would have came up to me and said, hey, What do you think the PS5 logo is going to look like? Draw it from memory. I would have drawn exactly what we got. Yeah. It's a PS5 logo.
What I expected.
Yeah.
Is that enough, though? Here, I'll bring it up on the screen so everybody in the studio can see it. That's your logo, guys.
I mean, it looks like what I expected.
You know, maybe they didn't even pay anybody. Like, maybe that's the thing. They don't even need to try anymore.
They're like, probably not. Hey, that intern that's always doodling on his notepad, what's he doing in the next 20 minutes? Yeah. Like, give him this to do real quick.
I feel like they were, like, going to go do their big unveiling meeting, and you're like, Jerry, you did the logo, right? I'm like, I thought Kevin was doing it. Like, crap. Okay, well, let me just open Photoshop real quick. Okay, boom. We're good. Let's go. Let's just slap that on the cover art, and let's go.
He's like, just take the top part of the three and then just turn it around. Yeah. Just sharpen that corner, make it a 5.
The memes, I think, have probably been the best thing to come out of this logo. But I mean, look, this is a good point. Remember when this was the logo for the PlayStation 3? When they actually spelt the word out and it kind of looked like Spider-Man font?
Yeah. That's right.
It you know what's funny is it can be, like, super unoriginal and uninventive, but it's still better than whatever Xbox is doing with their branding.
Come on, man. What is Xbox doing? What I don't even know what their current one is called.
Xbox Series X.
Xbox Series X. Not to be confused with the Xbox One X.
Yeah.
Great.
They're just trying.
Or the Xbox people. One.
Well, they've really given up.
Infinite groans.
Have you seen what that one actually looks like?
I haven't even seen it.
Xbox Series
I'm
X.
Buy it, but
you're gonna buy it?
Oh, I'm not gonna buy it.
Okay, good.
I'm all in on PC now.
I'll pull up a picture. If you guys didn't know, the Christmas party got pretty lit. It was the last episode that came out. If you guys have not missed it, or if you guys missed it, go back and man. Listen to it. It's definitely like
I crazy. Almost want to move the camera over here and just show everybody.
Yeah, I ended up busting up the TV in the studio, so it's a little hard to see things. But that's your Xbox Series X right
that
there.
That looks like a meme.
Hey, it looks like an Amazon.
Is that an Echo? Or
like, yeah, I was gonna say.
It's a tower.
It plays video games and purifies the air.
Yeah. It's an air humidifier. Yeah.
Got a cold? Turn on your Xbox.
There's literally no reason to buy a console.
You see anymore. You see the circle in the corner? That's where you pour the water in.
These things aren't even like they play all the same games now. Yeah. It's just gonna make it look a little bit better. The next thing kind of I had on the list to talk about anyways was, as far as pushing technology forward, Asus announced a 360 hertz monitor, which I'm conflicted about. What do you think of that one, Kyle?
I think it's cool. I think it's like kind of impractical at the moment, but that's the way that like hardware and software are. It's like hardware like pushes the boundaries, and meanwhile software is like, bro, we're like 5 years from that. We appreciate the gesture, but like none of our games can push that. Like,
yeah,
even with like a 1080, most can only push like 240, 250,
right.
260
barely. Like,
and so yeah. Like you would have to play like CSGO on all low settings with two 2080 Ti's running in SLI together to maybe hit like 380, or, 360. So like, it's cool, and I think it's like great that we keep pushing forward. Eventually we'll kind of get to the point where like it's not like a big deal, and like I assume it's mostly for like your esports pros.
Yeah, but then it goes back into the same mindset we were talking about earlier, like with the PS5 and all that, where the PS5 is going to be pushing out 8K resolution.
Mm-hmm.
Who has an 8K TV?
Exactly. That's true.
Nobody has an 8K resolution, and it's going to be doing that at like 30 frames per second. So none of this refresh rate stuff matters.
Exactly.
To
exactly.
You can only pick one or the other. You can pick. I want high refresh rate. Or I want high resolution. I want 4K, 8K at like 30 to 60.
Yeah.
Or I want like 140, 240 at like low settings, looks like crap, 1080p.
Yep.
Yeah.
You can't.
It's like you can't have your cake and eat it too, ultimately, right now with gaming. Either you're going to pay the money for the humidifier or the snake game over there on the other one, or you're going to pay for this badass screen that probably most games won't be able
to. Even still, even if you get the Xbox or PlayStation, you're getting like they're just now hitting 60. They're like, hey guys, welcome to 2019. We just hit 60 frames. And we're like, okay.
Because refresh rate doesn't even matter too much on the TV game where most of the consoles get hooked up.
Yeah.
So there's a huge disconnect still. That's the gap that needs to get bridged, I think, before we hit that true point of integration between PC and console gamers. Yeah. I think I would say anybody who got a shiny new PC for Christmas maybe, or who's going to be looking to get into building a PC in the new year, The most significant change you can make, though, besides your peripherals, like you got to have a good mouse and keyboard, but beyond that would be your monitor. Like that's going to make more of a difference. Going from 60 hertz refresh rate to 144 was the most significant change in my gaming.
That's literally 2 weeks ago I got my new monitor in, and it is next. It's like putting on glasses. It's like, so I got the new Battlefront 2 and just been playing like the campaign. Just like seeing that look super good and also be like 144 frames, it's just great.
It's smooth.
It's the best.
It's butter. That's what I told Ego Brain, who built the PC and put a nice graphics card, and he did all this stuff and he was running things on the highest graphics, but then we wanted to play more competitive games like Apex, and I was like, bro, you gotta get that 144 hertz if you really want to improve yourself. And he went out and picked it up, and it's wild. But from what I've heard from pros, because I've never gotten to touch one, is that the increase from 144 to 240 is not huge.
I think it's subtle. I mean, I've heard that it's pretty subtle. It's definitely not as, I mean, you can feel it and you can notice it, and especially if you're like at the 0.1% of total people playing the game, like it matters because you have the fast reaction time and all that kind of stuff. But like, it's not, unless you are up that level or like wanting to get like semi-pro, like I want to get really, really competitive with it, like it's just not worth it as much.
So it just depends on how much you're looking to invest in your gaming. Are you a casual gamer? Mm-hmm. You want to be competitive? And is that worth part of your gaming experience? It's much like with film, with movies, people who buy big-ass TVs and buy all these types of, you know, amplifiers and all this other stuff for their seating. It's, do you really need that? Or is that just excess to have it for the sake of having it?
And there comes a point, too, where you hit, like, a point of diminishing returns, like when The Lord of the Rings came out with a movie and, like, what did they do? Like, 90 frames per second?
It was 60 frames.
Yeah, with The Hobbit with 60 frames.
Was it
60?
Yeah, it was 60. Which is more than double.
Like,
of,
with film and video, it's so much weirder. With video games, we're kind of expecting it.
I went to a press screening where they tried that out with the tester audience, and everybody in the middle of the film was like, change the movie, this sucks. Like, people were yelling
in the middle. People were throwing up and stuff, too. It was like making people sick.
It's like, we're used to 24 frames as the film standard, and it kind of, because it keeps that difference between life, like, you know, and you're like, it tells your brain, like, this is not real life. Right. When they throw on 60, you're like, oh, shit, we're close. Like, this feels Uncanny Valley-esque. Like, you can see the CGI bits a little bit better. And it's just, like, it feels more unfamiliar and strange because it's too close to realism.
Yeah, that whole opening sequence for The Hobbit looked like a video game cutscene. And it just did not look like a part of a film. It looked like I was about to be handed a controller. Yeah. All right, you take over from here.
What did you think, Kurt? Have you watched any movies in that frame rate?
In 60?
Yeah.
I've watched some stuff. For me, it's like, I don't like it because I like film, you know, like I've got like, you know, a little low level like cinema quality camera and everything. So like I want to watch like film in 24 frames per second. That's how I like to watch film, but I'm so used to like watching video or, you know, even watching a certain certain like different videos in 60 frames per second or
porn.
Video games.
Pornography. Yeah.
That's the funny thing, because porn is always the leader in like video technology.
They're like,
we'll do this VR thing before anyone does a VR.
I was just going to say, that's the whole conversation in Tropic Thunder. It's like, oh yeah, it really took just a difference between people who watch porn on their systems or whatever. No.
Porn is at 8K, 360 frames per second.
They got the red cameras already day one, dude.
Here's the bigger thing. Because I don't think people actually learned, or at least filmmakers didn't learn from it, because Gemini Man, the recent Will Smith film, it showed in certain theaters at 120 frames per second.
Oh, I heard about that.
Really?
That's crazy.
It completely killed the movie. For people who went to go see it, if they saw it in the regular resolution, 24 frames, it was fine. It looked all right. But because they filmed it with the 8K or 4K, some higher resolution cameras for
porn
that.
Cameras.
Pretty much. they ended up shooting it at 120 frames per second, and it just killed the entire movie experience for a lot of people. Everybody was like, most of the people were like, this is horrible. I can't watch this.
I want to watch like a scene in 140 as like what that's like with that.
We can't.
It feels really like when it's something that's longer, it feels really, it's just too fluid.
Yeah.
You know, where you like 24, we're used to, it's kind of staccato. So we're used to like just the way that it looks. And like you said, our brains are programmed to see it that way. Like even watching something like that on such a big screen in 30, your brain can already start to tell the difference. It starts to look like a YouTube video, but then when things are so fluid, yeah, just I think, and that's part of what it is. It takes away the drama of it. Like the you know, that's what we see. We live like our eyes are analog, right? So everything is analog motion. There is like we see everything in between. Even this thing, which I always used to freak me out, you know, it's like our eyes are trying to keep up with the motion of our hands, but it's analog, so we see all of the in between and everything. And when you start reducing that in video, it just, I don't know, it just feels real weird. But I say first, we're talking about aesthetics ultimately, right?
Yeah,
like we're like everything is comes down to video. There really ain't no, I mean, unless you're Wally Feister shooting for Christopher Nolan, yeah. Nobody shoots in film anymore. Everything is digital.
Right.
Yeah. So for the aesthetics and for people to stay familiar, just keep it at 24 frames. And then when you want to do something really cool and you want to, you know, show, I think now Netflix is kind of like the perfect place for that, because now you got the TVs that are starting to get higher refresh rates. You want to try something like that? And then people will talk about it. Whoa, did you see how like they did like that crazy thing and all on Netflix? I think it's going to be better suited at home than trying to do it in the theater.
Here's the thing, because I know you want to move forward real quick, Corey, is even now, like an article dropped today that I actually thought was really interesting. They announced today at CES, because right now CES is going on in Vegas. They announced with the backing of Christopher Nolan as well as a couple other people that they're going to be pushing forward with what's called filmmaker mode on TVs. So they're going to be actually trying to do away with that motion smoothing feature that TVs have.
I turned that off on every TV that I ever come across.
And they're going to essentially they're going to essentially try to push forward to have TVs have a filmmaker mode on their TVs. So when you watch the movie in that mode, you're seeing it essentially as how the filmmaker intended for it to be seen the first time.
Right, which is not on a TV anyway.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's going to be like really, really pushed to, you know, just try to be on every TV coming out after 2020. Hmm. So that's going to be interesting.
Very cool. So the last thing I had on the docket is Curtis's Comic Book Corner, brought to us by Oblivion Comics and Coffee. Curtis, you know, I've been reading a lot more comics. I'm excited. We got the X-Men Krakoa cast going on.
We do.
And because, as we've noted several times, the X-Men comics are kind of fizzling. I mean, they came out strong with House and Powers of X.
Yes.
And now I'm starting to, you know, I'm getting the itch for other things. So I picked up Doctor Strange number one.
Mm. Doctor Strange number one or Doctor Strange the End?
The Surgeon one.
Oh, the Surgeon one. Okay. Yeah. Yes. How was that?
I thought it was awesome because it felt like a comic book. It knew exactly what it was, had the bright, bold text colors and things. Like, it was comic booky.
It was comic booky.
And, well, now it feels like most of the comic books I've been reading feel modernized. You know, they're trying to tell real stories, and there's just a different way to tell a story when you're, you know, trying to be gritty. And in this one, it was very, like, pow! You know, old classic comic book. And I enjoyed it a lot. It's one I'm going to put on the reserve list.
Is it nearby? Do you have it nearby?
Right? I think it's back there in that back corner.
Okay. I was going to ask you who's writing it.
I'll grab it while you get into what books you've been reading.
Speaking of the X books and them having a little bit of fizzle, one in particular, and I'm going to go as far as to say something happened where they didn't stay on track. The X-Men number 4 and number 5 ended up getting pushed back, and I'm actually kind of happy that they did, because number 4 started to actually fizzle again. Not that there was tons of action in this. There was action, but they got invited to like another national council, and there were some really pointed comments, and there was some action that was happening while they were there in the background. This actually did take it up another notch for me. I don't mark it as kind of the comic booky type one that Doctor Strange number one was for Corey. Although recently I did read a Spider-Man symbiote book that was done by Greg Land and how am I forgetting my good buddy's name? Anyway, Peter David, and it felt like that. And Corey, I'm gonna make sure you get that one too. But it did feel very comic booky and fun. This doesn't feel like that. It is a modernized comic book, but the dialogue was good and the action was solid. Marauders, which Corey, you were still feeling the last Marauders, right? Or did you start to fall off?
I fell off on Marauders. I think I'm actually behind like by two issues. But go
okay,
ahead.
No problem. This one, actually, it's weird because where I feel like they're gonna start falling off and being a little uninteresting. Jerry Duggan, I even had to hit him up on Twitter. I was like, "Hey man, I was pretty critical of you, and you liked my tweet when I was like critical of you, and." Now I got to give you some love. Like, this book is quality, even though I'm not always, like, loving it. The writing tends to be quality. And they did a cool thing. They had some interesting character moments, which I thought, kind of, were going to be a little sappy. No, it turned out to be pretty good. And then the overall story of what's happening with the Marauders as a whole team was pretty cool. So I dig in that. One of my favorite writers in modern comics these days, and one of the coolest dudes, definitely, when I get more advanced in my years, I hope I'm half as cool as Brian Edward Hill. This dude, he is a screenplay writer. He's producing shows for DC and stuff like that. And he's writing comic books. And he has, like, the best taste in, like, clothing and aesthetics and watches. And he lets me DM him. And he actually DMs me back. And it's pretty cool. He's into cyberpunk stuff. I'm really big. And I've always been big into cyberpunk. And, like, this noir cyberpunk tale and Fallen Angels continues to sizzle. I really like it. It's still my personal favorite book. The art, yes, it's true. The art sometimes just feels.
I think I'm one issue behind you on that, and that's my biggest complaint is that the art is so lifeless.
Yes, yeah. There's times where it's just like that's a copy paste, and you didn't really do extra outside of it. But then there's parts where it's like, this looks really cool. Like especially if you catch up on the last one, Corey. The very last page and some other pages in it are like some of the coolest images out of all of the X-Men books.
Oh, I'm catching up. Believe you me.
Brian Edward Hill, I would say, did it again with the story. Super interesting. I mean, it's an AI who says it's God and says Psylocke is its God because Psylocke didn't take it offline when it should have, and then it gained consciousness and started like consuming media in the world at like ridiculous rates.
Yeah,
it's pretty crazy.
And the first book it read was the Bible.
Yeah, the first book it read was the Bible,
which is what gave it the basis of this complex that it basically has.
Exactly. Yeah. Which I was like, that makes perfect sense. And then also like the Japanese culture within it, how every book has to do with some part of like being a samurai and Bushido and all that other stuff. I don't know. It's just Brian Edward Hill took all the coolest things that had nothing to do with what was going on in X-Men, crammed them into a book. And I'm sad that it's actually getting ready to end because he has to go back and produce more DC shows and write more screenplays. But I'm happy for him because he's a super cool dude. And then finally, since East of West is over, and that is one other comic book that I should have brought with me because my favorite comic of all time, the very last issue came out. That is how you end a comic book, in a freaking blaze of glory and beauty. But instead, I brought Criminal, number issue 11 of the Cruel Summer storyline. It had kind of gone down a little bit, but I'll tell you what. Last issue, freaking they brought up Joy Division Unknown Pleasures album, and they made it relevant in the comic.
That's
like it was part of the caper.
That's
the
all
tale.
You right there. That comic book is made for you.
Literally. It's about criminals doing crime. And families too, but and it's a perfect balance too. Nothing is sappy. They always, and then every time Ed Brubaker like makes it a conflict, it's always the perfect conflict. He seeds things properly, he puts people in certain scenarios perfectly, and then at the end of it, it always ends with a, oh damn, I totally forgot about that part. Oh, how is this gonna go? So this continues to not disappoint. This, since East of West is over, this is currently my favorite comic book, and everybody should be reading it. So again, thank you to Oblivion Comics and Coffee for providing us with these books, and you guys expect another Krakoa cast here soon as Corey and I
read up on these X-Men books and then discuss them. And then, again, try to figure out as we're down to, like, the last three relevant ones if we're going to maybe switch to some other
books. Yeah,
as this
thing limps along, we have to find other, you know, yep, comics to
read. The interesting thing, Corey, I forgot, is that in February... Oh, Mark Waid wrote it. Oh, yeah, that's all I needed. Mark Waid is still a very quality writer. He's the guy that did the Flash series with, you know, my name's Wally West.
Yeah.
I'm the fastest, you know, that they quote on the show. Mark Waid is the writer that wrote all
those
Flash
books. Oh, so this guy's
an OG. Oh, yeah, and he did Kingdom Come, too, which if anybody saw the new Wonder Woman trailer, Wonder Woman 84, that winged all-gold costume that she's wearing, that's from...
Alex Ross. Kingdom Come storyline.
Kingdom Come.
This one, it's cool. It's like he's back to being a surgeon again. So it's not Doctor Strange, like, spelt out doctor. It's like actual doctor, and the title, the subheader is like Surgeon Supreme.
Surgeon Supreme.
And he's not allowed to, like, blend the worlds. So he actually has to go back to being a surgeon, except he can see things through the spirit world. So, like, when a guy has a tumor, you know, he looks at it and sees, like, I'll hold it up to the camera there. If you're actually watching us on twitch.tv, you'd be able to see, like, the beast that is the tumor and how vicious it is and stuff. So the art style, that gives it creative to be, like, really good aesthetically. And this guy, Kev Walker, I think he's probably one of my favorites because of this book. Like, this is what I like to see when I look at comic books.
There you go.
Sure.
That was our show, everybody. Thanks for listening. It's good to be back. Video Game Bang 2020. Going to start off strong in this next decade and get things right the wrongs. I mean, we will never take a break that long again. We've seen what happens. It's our responsibility to do this podcast. Eddie, where can people find the Filmlosophers podcast?
You can find us at filmlosophers.com, where all 201 episodes are now housed. We just dropped our latest episode on the recent reboot / sidequel, if you want to call it, of The Grudge. We did a review on that. You can also catch us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and IG at filmlosophy101.
Kyle, where can people watch your podcast or listen to your podcast?
You can check me out at Blackwatch Report on Twitch and Blackwatch Report on Twitter. No Owen Report, super weird. You can follow me on Twitter, Kyle Winner. And check out, you know, if you're into game dev stuff, check out SAC Dev Collective. We're doing a lot of game dev stuff in town, so... If you want to get making
jam?
Video games,
when's the jam?
Dude, literally a week from Saturday on the 18th at Hacker Lab. If you want to make video games, come by 11 o'clock, Hacker Lab downtown. Come make a game with us, and it's a whole big program. We got lots of EA Capital Games folks coming, helping out, doing stuff. So definitely come by, check us out on social media and stuff like that.
What skill set do you need? Can I
anything?
Can I just show up with podcasting knowledge?
Anything.
And just,
we need people to come up with ideas. We need people to program. We need people to do art and sound and music and writing and anything you could do. There's nothing stopping you. If you have no knowledge of how to make a game, you'll learn.
That's cool. Kurt, man, which one of your projects do you want to plug today? Because there are a lot of them.
There are quite a few. Mainly, let's go with Sacktown Breakdown.
All right.
Sacktown Breakdown, yeah, check us out on Twitch, on YouTube. So far, we've covered, I think we've only missed four games, and I'm going to make a video where I cover all those. We're on a losing streak. Who wants to hear me talk about those? I'm going to put them all in one video, but me and my main man, Tap, breaking it down. And then, I mean, I'll mention the other one, Thinking Critical. Tune in. We break down comics. We got a show called Outside the Bleed where we go outside of the margins of the comics and, you know, kind of get real deep and nerdy.
All right.
That sounds dirty. Deep and nerdy.
Well, I am going to sleep for like 3 days. Work has been nuts. I put so much time and effort and thought and care into launching the new branding for the San Francisco Shock.
Nice.
Today was good, the day that we pushed it out, and it went so well. I was so glad. Any rebrand that you see anywhere, let alone in esports, is usually met with critical reception. And we took what we learned from some other launches in recent history and what we've seen other teams do. And I just am so thankful that the Shock community is such a like rabid fan base. And there was a lot of support from our Shockwaves, Jason Gist, who's the president over there, Beige the Square, all the fam over there. And it's all going to culminate in Shock 2020. where we're selling tickets. We moved our venue. That was another thing that was huge, that we went from the Cow Palace to Zellerbach Hall in Berkeley.
Hey.
And that's where we're going to be doing our first home games, March 28th and 29th. Tickets are on sale for that. Daily tickets are only $30 a pop.
Hey.
You can come hang out, watch some live gaming. We're going to have tons of entertainment. I will say more when I can say more. That's the next projects.
Ooh, okay.
But it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be the culmination. That there will feel... There will not be a dry eye from any of the staff, man. We've been really... That's the whole thing. When we started this thing, we knew the home games were coming, so we were putting heart and soul into making sure that these events are going to be good, high quality, and just stay tuned. So follow Shock on Twitter, twitter.com/sfshock. That's it, though.
No, Corey, there's one more.
What happened?
I wore this jersey because one of the other things that you work for...
Let's go.
Energy.
Yes.
My man, Nairo.
Nairobi Quesada.
Woo! Boy!
Pulling off the first S-tier event in 2020.
Let's make moves.
Yeah.
Hey, and he fought all the way back from loser's bracket, fought back through T, took T out, had to go, and then finally had to take out DeBuzz, one of the most annoying players to play, because he is so good. No disrespect to DeBuzz, but he ran it back against DeBuzz, reset the bracket, and then took that man out, and I was literally up there cheering so hard, and I had my Nairo jersey on, so I wore it today. Had to give, because Corey worked so hard.
You know what I mean?
I got it. Sometimes you forget about some of the stuff that you be even working on because you work so much.
Well,
so.
When all you do is win, some fall through the cracks.
Hey, let's go.
But I was right there with you, man, especially on that bracket reset, that game five, when there was like three false finishes in a row.
Oh, man.
That was nerve-wracking. I knew as soon as Luma was gone, I was like, okay, he's got
it. Yeah, he's got it.
There's no way. And then the false finishes, you just never know what's going to happen.
Right. So. Yeah, and that's because especially when the game first came out, we're like, oh, it's over. Oh, it's not over.
Yeah.
You know, it's still living. So shout out to Nairo. And Corey, I got to talk to you about getting one of those black and white energy jerseys, dog.
The championship editions?
Is that what that is?
We
is that
only the sell editions? Those when people win championships. So I don't even think you can buy those. But I got a special place in my heart for Kurt, so I'll make it happen.
Okay, cool. Because otherwise, I might have to break into Nairo's house. Anyway, that's it.
All right, that's it for Curtis, Eddie, Kyle. My name is Corey, saying you've just been banged.